Hi, welcome to another edition of the PCRF podcast. My name is Dave Page, and I'm a paramedic instructor at Inver Hills Community College and a paramedic at Alina Medical Transportation. I am here with
Dr. Aaron Burnett. I'm the assistant medical director of EMS at Regents Hospital.
And Dr. Keith Wesley. I'm the medical director for Health East Medical Transportation in St. Paul, Minnesota.
And we're here to talk about a recent article in Resuscitation, Effect of Adrenaline on Survival in Out-of-Hospital Cardiac Arrest, a Randomized Double-Blind Placebo-Controlled Trial by Dr. Jacobs et al. And we are finally going to get an answer, we hope, or are we, on epinephrine. So does someone want to introduce the methods and sort of the setup of this trial?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that, Dave. So this is a study out of Australia where, as you may be surprised to find out, they do not always give epinephrine in cardiac arrests. In this study, they developed two study vials which were identical. One contained placebo and one contained 1 to 1,000 of epinephrine. Now, during their cardiac arrests, the patients were randomly assigned to receive 1 milliliter of either the trial drug, which was the 1 to 1,000 of adrenaline, or placebo. What they looked at in this study were the outcomes in terms of both return of spontaneous circulation, as well as total neurologic outcome as measured by the Cerebral Performance Category score, or the CPC, which is pretty commonly used throughout studies looking at cardiac arrest to measure neurologic outcome. So in this trial, they had a total of 4,000 cardiac arrests that were screened for enrollment. Ultimately, only 600 underwent randomization. There was documentation available for 534 of those patients. 262 ended up in the placebo group and 272 in the epinephrine, or as they call it in the British system, adrenaline group. The groups were fairly well matched in terms of their baseline characteristics, age, gender, those receiving bystander CPR. And interestingly, ROSC occurred in 8.4% of patients receiving placebo, but 23.5% of those who received epinephrine. And that had an odds ratio of 3.4, and it was statistically significant. The survival to hospital discharge occurred in only 1.9% of the placebo group, and 4% of the patients who received the epinephrine. In both groups, all patients had a CPC score, which was fairly low. So in this paper, they concluded that the use of epinephrine during cardiac arrest had no statistically significant improvement in survival to hospital discharge. But there was a statistically significant improvement in the number of patients who had a return of spontaneous circulation after receiving the epinephrine.
So have we just proved that epinephrine can get your heart jump started and probably nothing more?
No, not at all. First, I think that we have to give a standing ovation to these researchers. Randomized double-blind studies in EMS are practically non-existent.
Agreed.
And it's related to the extreme difficulty of the federal government in allowing cardiac arrest research. The hoops that we have to jump through for institutional review board approval would simply make such a study like this in the U.S. absolutely impossible. And in fact, the researchers and the authors of this paper go into great detail when they talk about what they consider to be the limitations of this, that while they did, this was a multi-center trial, and got IRB approval across the board by all the provinces to do this, the things that Dr. Burnett brought up was 906 eligible patients did not get randomized. That's more than the number that did get randomized. And the reason that they didn't get randomized was because five of the centers still had what they considered to be an ethical dilemma with withholding the gold standard, despite the fact that there is no randomized controlled trial to make it the gold standard. And so while clearly from a statistical perspective, ROSC was definitely improved with adrenaline, everyone goes, well, but what about hospital discharge? Well, if you actually, I don't know. When you look at the numbers and say that survival to hospital discharge by the placebo group was 1.9% and the epi group was 4%, you have to look at the confidence interval. And the confidence interval on that is so huge, that tells you that, it doesn't tell you anything other than it makes you wonder, what if those other 900 patients had been randomized? The failure of that statistical significance, even though to me, I mean, you just go, okay, well, 2% versus 4%, clinically, that sounds good. But had they randomized the additional 900 patients, could that statistical significance in ROSC been carried through to survival to discharge? And we won't know because of this continued perception that we can't do randomized controlled trials on cardiac arrest when we are too fearful that we're going against some arbitrarily defined gold standard.
You mean the American Heart Association?
I didn't say that.
No. They're following ILCOR. Epinephrine is not just an American Heart Association. I'll defend the AHA for once.
But look at this. So, I mean, this is a great example of how sometimes we think what we do in our own backyard is the best way and the only way, and there isn't another way. But look at this. If you go out to Australia, the Australian Resuscitation Council is who gives the recommendations that these ambulance services follow, and there are no drugs routinely administered during their cardiac arrests. And they specifically outline that follows the ARC's recommendations, and the reason for that is that there's no good science that these medications that we use in cardiac arrest work, that they improve outcomes. And I think you can see suggestions of that in the newest 2010 AHA guidelines, which are really de-emphasizing medications in cardiac arrest. We still give epi, we still give amiodarone for VFib, VTAC, but now atropine's been completely de-emphasized, as has bicarb in prior editions. I think what we're seeing is one of the key takeaways for this paper is there's more ways to do it than what we're used to here in the U.S., and that there's not a lot of excellent science for the things that we do in pre-hospital cardiac arrest resuscitation. That being said, there are some things we know work, and that's defibrillations, good quality CPR. The rescue trial argued that an active compression decompression CPR with an impedance threshold device improves neurologic outcome. But one of the things that I think you need to look at from this study is that there's other ways of doing things.
And I think one other one, and it's kind of the other side of the coin, is the number of cardiac arrests attended by the ambulance was 4,103. And of that, 2,513, they didn't even commence resuscitation. Now, the authors don't tell us what that criteria is for not initiating. I mean, now to me, that's, you know, 50% of your arrests that your ambulance goes to, you don't even start CPR and start working. That's not an apples to apples comparison to most U.S. EMS responses to cardiac arrest. But I'm not saying that they left people to die, but maybe they know something we don't. And that is, we should be expending the most energy to save the most salvageable.
Now, one thing.
Ooh, that's an interesting idea in medicine. Okay, go ahead, guys.
So, I mean, one thing I think we can all agree on is that epi appears to get the heart started preferentially over a placebo. Are we all on board with that? The ROS rates were up.
I agree.
So, I think part of the question.
Yeah, but what about flow to the brain and. Whether or not it really actually makes a difference when you're trying to perfuse.
So this is where the ethicists and philosophers get to come in and say, you know, what's the point? I mean, we can get the heart started with epinephrine, and clearly if you're going to have someone survive to leaving the hospital, that's the first step that's necessary. But it's not sufficient.
And I don't see anything mentioned anywhere in this study about post-arrest hypothermia. Or the percentage of patients that went for rescue PCI.
This is why I hate cardiac arrest research. I mean, I just get tired of study after study that really doesn't account for the things that we know now matter. And so do you really know that epinephrine really made a difference or not in survival to discharge if you didn't do all the things that we know do matter to survival to discharge, like therapeutic hypothermia?
Well, you can't get patients to survive to discharge if you can't get their heart started. So All we have control over is what we have control over, and that's getting their heart started. Then we have to rely that the science will continue to work on neuroprotective processes, and those will be separate studies. And that's why I really wished that there hadn't been this ethical issue to arbitrarily not randomize this additional 900 patients, because that could very well have told us the answer of did it affect survival to discharge, because the confidence interval on their difference of 2% versus 4% almost approached zero, is 0.7 to 6.3. That's a huge confidence interval, which means that you're dealing with very low powers of numbers at that point.
So the bottom line for me is this paper argues that we should continue using epinephrine in EMS. It gets the heart started. We still have a lot of work to do to protect the brain throughout this resuscitation and in the post-resuscitation phase. But if you can't get the heart started, you got no chance whatsoever.
Well, and now we even beyond just hypothermia and all of that, we're starting to learn that we need to get them off high-flow oxygen as soon as possible, and that prolonged periods of 100% oxygen worsens neurologic outcome. I'll put on my hat and prognosticate that the 2015 guidelines will say that we should be doing cardiac arrest with room air.
And on that note, thank you for tuning in to another edition of the PCRF Podcasts.